Shalom. Okay. Chag Purim. There's a very well-known song in Hebrew, Chag Purim, Chag Purim, Chag Gadol LeYiladim, right? Because it's considered a kid's chag, and not necessarily one for grown-ups. Many people go to work, you know, it's just, I mean, it's a regular day in many senses. And if you think of it, even more so, halachically, it's different than any other chag we have, obviously d'oraita and also d'rabbanan. No miracles happened on Purim. We don't recite Hallel on Purim, as opposed to any other chag. Even in Chanukah, we had Nes Pach HaShemen, but here, no miracle. I mean, obviously, Hashem helped us out there, but it wasn't miraculous. It was, you know, course of nature. There is no Isur Melacha, even not a temporary one. Even in Chanukah, after lighting the candles, we have a short Isur Melacha here, nothing. What are the mitzvot of the day, other than obviously reciting the, say, reading the Megillah? Mishloach Manot and Seuda, all about food. What? Matanot Levyonim, yes. In many senses, it's much less spiritual than other chagim. And that is why the words of the Zohar seem to be very puzzling. The Zohar says, you see this in source number 3, Purim itkaret al shem yom ha-kippurim, meaning the Zohar hints that Purim sounds like yom ha-kippurim. Why, says the Zohar? Because yom ha-kippurim in the future will look more like Purim. Just like we're rejoicing and enjoying ourselves in Purim, Im Yirtzeh Hashem, in the future, Yom HaKippurim will not be torture, will not be inui. It would be as happy as Purim. The Ari and the Shla had taken the words of the Zohar even more to the extreme. And they say something that's very well known, but there's a lot of depth to it, and this is what I wish to focus on today. The Ari says, two words, Kippurim ke-purim. I will literally translate, ke in Hebrew is kmo, like. Yom HaKippurim is like Purim. Now, when you take something and compare it to something else, obviously, we can derive from the words of the Ari and the Shla that in a sense they claim that by comparing Kippurim to Purim, Purim may be greater on a greater spiritual level than Yom HaKippurim, which is a good question. How could we even imagine? Take the greatest day of our lives, the greatest day in the year, Yom HaKippurim. This amazing day. And now, the Zohar hints that it's nothing is too, you know, it's just, this is just an imitation of the real thing. That's Purim. By the way, this shita of claiming that Purim is of great importance is clearly reflected in a series of midrashim, which seem to be going out of their way to emphasize the importance of a day, which seems to be, as we have said, I would say something like the underdog of the chagim. What do I mean by that? Look at the midrash in source number 1, Midrash Ocher Tov. The midrash says, Kol ha-mo'adim betelim, in the future, all the chagim will be void, which is a question by itself. Why, you know, it's such a good thing. Why stop a good thing like Rosh Hashanah, Sukkot, Pesach? But for the purpose of the discussion, let's not get into it. V'imei ha-purim lo yu betelim. There's only one exception. Only one chag will exist in the future, and that is Chag Purim. By the way, there's another version of this midrash, according to which only two chagim will exist, which? Purim and Yom HaKippurim. I brought the extreme one that says even Yom HaKippurim will be canceled, only Purim will exist. Why?
And on the same note, look in source number 2. This is the midrash that appears in Talmud Yerushalmi. Rabbi Yochanan amar, הנביאים והכתובים עתידים לבטל, וחמשת ספרי תורה אינן עתידים לבטל, meaning in the future, all the נביאים, take all the נביאים you can think of, חבקוק, יחזקאל, ירמיה, ישעיה, עמוס, whatever you can think of, all of them will be canceled, will be void again, other than חמישה חומשי תורה, which will exist in the future. רבי שמעון בן לקיש אמר, אף מגילת אסתר והלכות אינן עתידים לבטל. There's also another exception. All the scriptures will not exist in the future, but חמישה חומשי תורה and מגילת אסתר. Now let's remind ourselves, מגילת אסתר, there is a big debate whether it should have been added to the Tanakh at all. We know it's the last book to be added to the Tanakh. And now they tell us that out of all the Tanakh, this is the only Megillah that will exist. Tehillim? No. But Megillat Esther, yes. Why? It seems like our sages are going out of their way to overemphasize the importance of something that seems to be much less of importance than other Chagim, than other scriptures. What's the message here? By the way, another example, and I'll repeat that example later, I'll go back to it later on, is the Midrash that appears in the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat in source number 5. The Gemara in Masechet Shabbat talks about the receiving of the Torah in Ma'amad al-Sinai. We'll go back to it, so I'll just briefly say. The Gemara says that when Bnei Yisrael accepted the Torah in Har Sinai, there was a problem, because in a sense the Torah was enforced upon them. Kafalim har kegigit. We'll repeat this later on. Nevertheless, the Gemara ends, the last words of the Gemara, I'm reading the last line, Amar Rava, af al pichen hadur kiblu abimei Achashverosh, dichtiv kimu vekiblu ayudim. Nevertheless, at the time of Achashverosh, this is when Bnei Yisrael fully accepted upon themselves the Torah. In Har Sinai, no. Any other event that you can think of, no. The time where Bnei Yisrael have accepted the Torah in the best manner possible was at the time of Achashverosh. Again, seem to go out of their way to overemphasize the importance of that chag, of that Megillah, of that generation. And let's remind ourselves the reputation of that generation. They were sitting in the castle of Achashverosh, and the Megillah starts off with a great feast that was kosher lemehadrin, asot kirtzoni shvaish. The Midrash says that the Mashgiach was not less than Mordechai himself. But the Torah, the Megillah, I'm sorry, mentions what vessels, what dishes were they using? Those were the vessels of the Beit Mikdash, ve'kelim mikelim shonim, and they were sitting and eating from the vessels of the Beit Mikdash. And now the Torah, now the Midrash says that they have accepted upon themselves the Torah in a better manner than Bnei Yisrael, than Dor De'ah, who saw Hashem in Ma'amad al-Sinai. Why? Okay, I've suggested a few examples that seem to overemphasize the importance of Purim. Now I want to go to the other extreme. Look in source number 4. This is a halakha. Amar Shmuel appears in the Gemara in Masechet Megillah. Esther eina metam'a et hayadayim. The Megillah of Esther does not defile the hands. Is that good or bad? Why is it bad? Okay, so actually it seems to be a very positive thing. Baruch Hashem, Megillat Esther does not defy the hands. But actually it's bad in a sense. Why? The story is as follows. We know that at the time of Beit Mikdash, there were certain foods that could only be eaten in a Kedusha manner. Certain Trumot and certain Masrot. Now obviously one cannot run to the Beit Mikdash, you know, for every apple. So what they would do is, obviously, you know, I won't get into the halachic details, but, you know, they would put them aside and, you know, cover them in a very respectable manner until they rot and, you know, can be tossed away. Now, how does the mind of a Jew work? You put all the Trumot u'Masrot in one place and they are holy, right? So what would you put next to them? You would put the holy scriptures, right? Holy goes with holy. But then all the insects would come to the fruit and vegetables or whatever that was there, and would obviously damage the scriptures. So our sages were dealing and debating, how will we save the scriptures? And eventually they have come up with the following decision. They had a regulation according to which the scriptures defile the hands. And once the scriptures give tumah, obviously you cannot put them next to the tumat and ma'asrot. And in that manner, they have saved the holy scriptures. But by saying that Megillat Esther eina metama et hayadayim, what are we actually saying? We're saying, this is not a serious book. This could be left aside with the tumat and ma'asrot. We don't care as much for Megillat Esther. And the Gemara continues saying, Lemeima desavar Shmuel, Esther lav beruach hakodesh neemra. Vehamar Shmuel Esther beruach hakodesh neemra. Says the Gemara, why would Shmuel say that Megillat Esther is an exception to all the other scriptures? Why would Shmuel say that we don't care for the Megillah and that it can be ruined by the insects and can be placed next to the Tumot and Masrot? Says the Gemara, it's not that Shmuel thinks that Megillat Esther was not given in Ruach HaKodesh. Obviously, Megillat Esther is holy and was given in Ruach HaKodesh. But, says the Gemara, Ne'emra likrot velo ne'emra lichtov. Megillat Esther was given us to be recited but not to be written. That's the bottom line of the Gemara. What does it mean? We have specific halachot as to how the Megillah should be written. We read the Megillah on the klaf, right? What does it mean, ne'emra likrot velo ne'emra lichtov? Oh, so it could be, it's a nice question. I have to think about that. It has to do with the letters that were sent. It's a question. We will try to later on unveil maybe a different understanding of what does it mean that Megillat Esther is an exception to other scriptures, that it was meant to be recited and not written. I think I have asked enough questions, and we're approaching Pesach, so I'm allowed to ask Arba Kushiyot, but still, let's kind of reach a solution here. I want us to focus on the Midrash that appears in source number 5. This is a Midrash that we have already mentioned, and I hope this is going to be our starting point. Let's now read this Midrash in depth. The Midrash is saying, as we have said, that there was a problem with the receiving of the Torah for the first time. And the Midrash starts as follows. We have read not too long ago in Parashat Yitro that Bnei Yisrael are standing beneath the mountain. Now there is a linguistic problem here, says the Midrash. You cannot stand under a mountain. You can stand side from the mountain. You can stand behind the mountain, in front of the mountain. You cannot stand literally under a mountain. Says the Midrash, no, there is not a problem here. Melamed shekafalem har kegigit. Ve'amar lehem, im atem mekablim et haTorah mutav, ve'im lav sham te'kvurotchem. Says the Midrash, no, it's pshat. They were standing beneath the mountain, and the mountain was aiming to close on them. The mountain was aiming to, in a sense, to bury them alive. And Hashem, according to the Midrash, seems to have been threatening Nisan and telling them as follows. If you accept the Torah here in front of Har Sinai, or under Har Sinai, then all is well. But if you choose not to accept the Torah, well, we'll have to end it here and now, and you will be buried under the mountain. Melamed shekafalem har kegigit. Let's ask ourselves, what does it mean that the Midrash is saying that this situation was amended when Bnei Israel have accepted the Torah fully in the Megillah? The Midrash says, "Amar Rava afal picha nadur kiblu amimei Achashverosh, dichtiv kimu vekiblu ayudim." Maybe what the Midrash is hinting is that the same problem that had caused the deterioration right after receiving the Torah in Har Sinai can actually be overcome and amended by Chag Purim. Purim is the solution to the issues Bnei Yisrael had in front of Har Sinai. Now we know they had issues because eventually, after receiving the Torah, almost immediately, instantly, they sinned. Chetah Egel. According to the Midrash, the problem started way before Chetah Egel. It started when they have received the Torah. Now I ask you, what was the problem? What was so wrong with the manner by which they have accepted the Torah? They have witnessed Hashem. They have seen voices. What's wrong with that? Even more so, we know it appears towards the end of Parashat Mishpatim, but in our recollection, Bnei Yisrael in Ma'amad Har Sinai say Na'aseh V'Nishma. A person is not forced to say Na'aseh V'Nishma. It seems as if Bnei Yisrael willingly chose to accept upon themselves the Torah. So what does the Midrash mean when the Midrash says that the Torah was actually imposed upon Bnei Yisrael? In what sense were Bnei Yisrael forced to accept the Torah? There is a tremendous, tremendous parish of the Meshech Chochmah. And he goes into the words of the Midrash and says the Meshech Chochmah, in order to understand what was the problem in Har Sinai, we have to look into the words of the Midrash, right? The Midrash says that the mountain was aiming on closing upon them, and kafalem har kegigit, it's as if a barrel or something was enforced upon them. Now, assume we would be sitting outside, and all of a sudden a huge barrel would drop from the sky and, you know, upon us. What would happen? Explains the Meshech Chochmah. Everywhere we would look, what would we see? The barrel would block everything from our eyesight. We would only see the walls of the barrel, right? Explains the Meshech Chochmah. Look at source number 6. Perush. Sheher alem kvod Hashem behakit uvehitgalut nifla'a עד כי ממש בטלה בחירתם הטבעי, ויצאה נשמתם מהשגת כבוד השם, והיו, look at his words, מוכרחים כמלאכים בלא הבדל, וראו כי כל הנבראים תלוי בקבלת תורה, רק בקבלת תורה. Explain the message חוכמה. When do we have a sense of imposement? When is something imposed upon a person? Something is imposed upon a person when there is no alternative. If I have nothing to choose from, in a sense, it is imposed upon me. Now, when do we have b'chira chofshit, true b'chira chofshit? When there are certain alternatives, right? So, for the purpose of the discussion, assuming a person chooses to smoke, right? So, a person willingly has the b'chira to smoke or not to smoke, but it's all about that person's choices. Now, the person obviously knows that there are outcomes. I mean, like, there could be medical issues, assuming he chooses to smoke or not to smoke. But still, that person has b'chira. Assume for the purpose of the discussion that anyone, if anyone would just take a puff from a cigarette, lightning would come out of the sky and psh, that would be the end of it. That would not be freedom of choice. One would have to be crazy to smoke a cigarette. Same here, explains the Meshech Chochmah. Ma'amad Har Sinai was so vivid. It was so obvious that this is the real thing. You witness Hashem in front of your eyes. You see voices. You hear the voice of Hashem reciting the first two commandments. One cannot just look at Har Sinai and say, I'm not convinced I'm going to try Buddhism. It doesn't work this way. All other alternatives seem irrelevant when you are facing the real thing. And that was obviously the real thing. So the fact that the Torah was imposed upon them has nothing to do with any threat. It has to do with the fact that all other alternatives became irrelevant. They were mukhachim. They had to choose the Torah. They willingly said Na'aseh V'Nishma because they obviously realized that that is the real thing. But it's not that they have chosen to do so while considering and debating out of true b'chira all the options and saying, oh, this is our bottom line. That wasn't the case. And in that sense, explains the Meshech Chochmah, that is the criticism of Chazal. The Torah was given to Bnei Yisrael in such a miraculous manner. But as we say in English, easy come, easy go, right? They did not work to reach such a spiritual level. It wasn't an outcome of their true madriga. They were slaves that were just taken less than 50 days before that. They were taken out of Egypt. They did not choose to accept the Torah. They did not work to accept the Torah. And after Ma'amad Sinai was over, and the miracles ceased, and Moshe disappeared, and Har Sinai returned to be the small, nice mountain, what do you do now? How do you take this tremendous experience and implement it on a daily basis? This is what they have lacked. There's the Midrash, everyone knows this Midrash, a very well-known Midrash, that says, Ra'ata shifcha al hayam, ma shelo ra'a Yechezkel ben Vuzi b'maaseh merkava, meaning that the slaves, Bnei Israel, who exited Egypt, have witnessed more miracles in Yam Suf than Yechezkel Ben-Vuzi, the great Navi, when he witnessed in his prophecy Ma'amad HaMerkava. So who's greater, the Shifcha or Yechezkel? So it seems from the words of the Midrash that the Shifcha is on a greater level than Yechezkel because she saw more miracles. The Kotzke Rebbe has an outstanding parish. He adds two words. He says, Ra'ata Shifcha v'nish'ara Shifcha. The maid, that slave, saw so many miracles, but once the miracles stopped, she stayed a maid. She was a Shifcha. Yechezkel may not have seen such great things, but whatever he did see was an outcome of his own efforts. He worked to become Yechezkel ben Vuzi. He was worthy of seeing Ma'aseh HaMerkava, and that was a product of his own choices, his own hashka'a, his own commitment, his own spiritual level. That is a reflection of who he actually was. So at the end of the day, Yechezkel is Yechezkel, and the Shifcha is the Shifcha, and in Hebrew we say Yechia Evdel HaKatan. This great difference between the Shifcha and Yechezkel. And that's the issue according to the Meshech Chochmah. And obviously now we can understand why we had Chatei Eked. Because if Bnei Yisrael lack the ability to implement the Torah, if they don't see how they can relate to the Torah on a personal level, if they did not really choose the Torah, but rather the Torah was imposed upon them in the sense that they had no choice, well, obviously, it's so easy to let go and lose control once, again, the event is over. Naseh lanu Elohim. How do we create our own God? We cannot, this, what we have seen in Har Sinai, that does not relate to our everyday life. That was the issue. Says the Midrash, Hadur kimua bimei Achashverosh. Purim is the answer to the tragedy of Ma'amad Har Sinai. Why is Purim the answer? There's a Midrash that appears in source number 7. The Midrash that appears in the Gemara in Masechet Chulin. And the Midrash is asking, Esther min HaTorah minayin. Where do we see Esther in the Torah? Which is a question by itself. Why should we see Esther in the Torah? Not everything, you know, not every character in our Jewish, you know, tradition appears in the Torah, but let's leave that question aside. The Midrash is answering by quoting a pasuk from Perek Lamed Aleph in Dvarim. Va'anochi Esther astir panai. Where do we see Megillat Esther in the Torah? In the Hester Panim. Towards the end of Chumash Dvarim, Hashem is talking to us about a possibility of Hester Panim. It doesn't sound too promising, Hester Panim. We are losing Hashem's direct supervision upon us. We don't, obviously Hashem always is there for us, but we don't see it in such a miraculous manner as Nisal has witnessed this in the desert. And it sounds like a bad thing, Hester Panim. But maybe, well, all we know is to choose to accept upon ourselves the Torah only when it is given to us in a miraculous manner. Maybe what we need right now is a bit of a Esther Panim, where there is no miraculous intervention. Hashem does not miraculously show us the way. And we, out of a situation of Esther Panim, out of so many alternatives, truly choose to accept upon ourselves the Torah. That is an indication that we have been able to overcome the effects of Chata Eger. Now, as opposed to then, we really want this tradition. We really want this heritage. We have chosen this heritage. And in that sense, this is the greatness of Purim. This is also the explanation of the Maharal to the fact that in the future, all the Chagim will cease to exist as opposed to Purim. Explains the Maharal in source number 8. Ki le'atid yesh shi'abud malchuyot ikar v'yitziat Mitzrayim tafel ulefichach kol ha'moadim asher hem zecher liyitziat Mitzrayim bilvad v'hem tfelim le'shi'abud malchuyot שייך לומר שיהיה ביטול המועדים כאשר אינה מיקר. אבל פורים אינו זכר ליציאת מצרים, דבר זה לא יהיה בטל. Explains the Maharal. The more the redemption process progresses, the more it is expected of us to independently stand for ourselves and change our situation for the better. To willingly and independently take control. We are not in a need of miracles anymore, but rather we are looking at our own potential of actually redeeming ourselves. And in that sense, says the Maharal, the future Geula is different than the Geula from Mitzrayim, when it was Hashem yilachem lachem v'atem techarishun. We were passive and Hashem was doing all the work for us. Nothing's are changing, says the Maharal. The more we are, you know, the more time progresses, the more we are expected to take control of our lives and willingly change our own situation. We are not expected to be passive anymore, but rather actively bring the redemption process and make it become a reality. Explains the Maharal. All the Chagim, what are we actually celebrating in the Chagim? What is like the essence of the Chag? All the Chagim have to do with miracles. Obviously, the Chagim Deoraita and the miracles that happened that Bnei Yisrael have encountered as they were exiting Egypt and, you know, passing the desert. And even more so, Chag Hanukkah, the miraculous interference of Hashem. Purim is the only Chag, explains the Maharal, that is an indication of Bnei Yisrael's taking control over their future, over their fate, and changing their fate for the better, obviously with a lot of help from Hashem. But it's about Bnei Yisrael willingly making the choice and not just being passively dragged into it. And in that sense, says the Maharal, Purim is the Chag of the future. By the way, take the words of the Maharal. I think that this could shed light on the Ari and the Shlaz statement, Ki Purim Ke Purim, right? In a sense, not that it's not a big deal. Obviously, it's a big deal to feel the Kedusha in the air on Yom HaKippurim, but it's easier. Everyone that's in shul, you don't even have to be in shul, but obviously, when you're in shul, you cannot feel, you know, you cannot feel not touched. You know, something is, you know, happening. It's such a great day. There's so much yirah. You feel the kedusha in the air. You're behaving like an angel. You're not even a human being. It's just oh so holy. It's much simpler, in a sense, to feel the spirituality of Yom HaKippurim. The true challenge is Purim. Take this regular day. There is no Isur Melacha. Just a regular whole day, almost, you know, an atmosphere of Hester Panim, because you don't feel anything spiritual, everything significant or unique. But to make this whole day into a great spiritual day, that is the challenge. And by being able to do so, we are indicating that we truly have the spiritual strength to take control over our fate, and to choose, to willingly choose to accept upon ourselves the Torah. That is one explanation. But for the purpose of the discussion, I wish to suggest a different one as well. There's a midrash that appears in the Gemara in Masechet Ta'anit. You see it in source number 9. We all sing, right? Misha, right? Misha nichnas adar. Right? Not everyone knows that this is not the accurate quote of the Gemara. The Gemara doesn't just say, it says so. But it says something in the beginning, something very complicated, and it's much harder to sing it. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Yehuda Brei Derav Shmuel Bar Shilat Mishmei Derav, כשם שמי שנכנס אז ממעטים בשמחה, כך מי שנכנס אדר מרבים בשמחה. Now let's see you sing that. We are happy in Purim just as we are sad in Tisha B'Av. And as the happiest month in the year, Chodesh Adar, enters, we should feel we should rejoice as we are saddened when the month of Av begins. What? We are comparing sadness to happiness? And we're telling ourselves that we should be happy on Purim as we are sad in Chodesh Av, in Tisha B'Av? What does that have to do with each other? I mean, like, you take the saddest month in the year and the happiest month in the year and just say, okay, you should be happy as you're sad. It seems to be irrelevant. Happiness and sadness come from, you know, those are two completely opposite feelings. So, you know, so I know the explanations people say, okay, you should put much passion into it, you know, the same energy, the same... Yeah, that's true. But again, I think it's kind of odd to compare the saddest event in Jewish history to the happiest one. And obviously, there's a great message here. And maybe the message is the same message that we have seen when we have read the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat about Ma'amad El Sinai. Maybe what the Gemara is hinting here is that in order to overcome the effects of Tisha B'Av, we need Purim. That in a sense, Purim is not just the answer to Chata Eger, but also the answers to the problems in Chodesh Av. What were the problems of Chodesh Av? Okay, so obviously Beit Mikdash was destroyed, but it started way before that. The Mishnah in Masechet Ta'anit says what? Chata Magim, exactly. The Mishnah in Masechet Ta'anit starts off by saying that five things happened on Tisha B'Av, and the first one, the first event to happen on Tisha B'Av was Chata Meraglim. And here the Gemara in Masechet Ta'anit says so as well. The Gemara says, I'm continuing to read in source number 9, V'tisa kol ha'eda v'itnu et kolam v'ivku ha'am b'layla ahu. We know the Meraglim come back with not so much flattering news. And Bnei Yisrael are so overwhelmed and they gather together and all of them cry. And this is a very, very hard Gemara. Amar Rava, Amar Rav Yochanan, Oto Ayom Erev Tisha Be'av Haya, Amar Lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Atem Pchitem Pchiyah Shel Chinam, Ve'ani Koveh Lechem Pchiyah Ledorot. You have cried for no reason, Lechinam. So this is going to be a day that will be the saddest day for generations to come. Pchiyah Ledorot. And this is where the Mishnah Nichnas Adar, Marbin B'Simcha, comes from. Very hard Gemara. What was the problem in Chet HaMeraglim? For years, I have been troubled with that sin. I mean, Chet HaEgel, even with the explanation of the Meshech Chochma, we know that it was initiated by the Erev Rav, right? You know, the Amcha, you know, those people who added, you know, in a sense, enforced upon themselves upon Nesre. We can understand that maybe. But Chet HaMeraglim, who started it? It was the Nassim, it was the greatest lay leaders, the spiritual leaders of Am Yisrael. Even more so, if you read Parashat Shlach Lecha, the beginning of the Parashat Shlach Lecha, the Parasha lists the Meraglim, right? Says the names of the Meraglim. According to the Ramban bases this on Midrash, they are listed in the order of their greatness. Try it out. They don't appear in the orders of the tribes, not in any other order, but the order of the greatness. Kalev ben Yefune appears third. Yehoshua bin Nun appears fifth. So we're talking about people who were even greater than Kalev and Yehoshua. And they promote such a terrible sin. Obviously a sin that we have never overcome the outcomes of until today. Pchiyah ledorot. What went on in that sin? What was the problem? There is a great perush of the Sfat Emet. I think it sheds a lot of light on the story of the Meraglim and in a sense on Purim as well. Explains the Sfat Emet in source number 10. Bapasuk v'ayah boch lechem milechem ha'aretz tarim utruma smichut ha'parasha hafrashat chala le'meraglim. We know that the parasha of hafrashat chala appears in smichut to the story of the Meraglim. I don't want to get into it. כי ניחם אותם השם יתברך, בעבור כי תרעומתם היה שלא להיות נחותי דרגה. דמעיקר הדור מדבר היה בחינת משה רבינו עליו השלום, שהוריד להם תורה ומן לחם מן השמיים, ובחינת ארץ ישראל היה לחם מן הארץ. The Meraglim were great spiritual individuals. And that was the reason for their sin. Their greatness caused their sin. What they do, the Meraglim explains this for them, and they do a simple calculation. When we are in the desert, we have Amud HaEsh, Amud HaAnan, Anani HaKavod, Be'er Miriam. We have the man from the Shamayim, the Slav. We don't need to work for our living. We don't need to do anything. We have all the time in the world to sit down and do what? Study Torah, become, uplift ourselves in a spiritual manner. Come into Eretz Israel, only trouble. We have to conquer the land, we have to establish an army, a legal system, police, people have to work for their living. We will not have a second to study Torah. So in a sense, we're doing Hashem a great favor by convincing Bnei Yisrael to stay in the desert. This is where the Torah is going to be, alive. Coming into Eretz Israel, the future of the Torah is in question. And in that sense, explains this Fatemet, they willingly choose to tell Bnei Yisrael to refrain from entering Eretz Israel because it's Eretz Ochelet Yoshevea. Maybe not in the physical sense, but in the spiritual sense. In Eretz Israel, you will not lead the spiritual life that you have here in the desert. The only problem, says this Fatemet, with this notion, with this idea, is A, Hashem said the complete opposite, which is, a minor detail, but what can we do? And also explains this Fatemet, the only problem, the major problem that the Meraglim had, is that they lack the perception of the role of the Torah. The Torah is not about theory. It is about theory, but it's not just. Etz chayim hi lemachazikim ba. It's Torah chayim. It should be implemented. That is what makes the Torah real. That is what makes the Torah alive. When I take my everyday life, my matters of mundane, and make them spiritual, this is the Torah. The Torah is not just theory to be studied. It's supposed to be implemented. And in that sense, explains this Fatemet, what the Meraglim did not understand is, for example, take mitzvot atluyot ba'aretz, right? Leket shichacha upea. You have mitzvot that cannot be observed, that cannot even, that will not exist unless you physically involve yourself in hard labor. But that is what Hashem expects us to do, to physically bring the Kedusha and make it a reality. That is what is expected of us. We have said, Keshem shemi shenichnas av, mema'atin besimcha, kach mi shenichnas adar marbin besimcha. How do we bring simcha in Adar? We do so by adding to our lives what we have taken away in Chodesh Av. Explains Rav Kook in source number 11. We have started off by saying that Purim, as opposed to any other chag, has no Isur Melacha. Explains Rav Kook, ironically, that is the greatness of Purim. Ve'al ken yesh lomar, says Rav Kook, de'hai tama de melacha lo kiblu aleu beyom bepurim, de'kehayom en agashmi mitnaged leruchani. On this day of Purim, there is no Isur Melacha because as opposed to any other chag, on this day, there is no contradiction between spirituality and secularity. The Gashmi is not distinct from the spirituality, but rather they complete each other. Al ken bechol yom tov sheikar al tachlit shel kulam sheyeh mikra oneg leitaneg al Hashem lo yitachel liyot asuk bemelachot achol. Says Rav Kook, it's obvious for all of us that sometimes in order to feel Kedusha, we have to detach ourselves from our matters of mundane. What's Shabbat? The fact that we don't talk on the phone, we don't drive our car, we don't turn on the light, that gives us a sense of spirituality. Same with every chag, says Rav Kook. Sometimes in order to bring Kedusha to the air, we need to detach ourselves from matters of mundane. But Purim is different. In Purim, we bring Kedusha to the matters of mundane. There is nothing that is irrelevant on Purim. Even the food, the drinking, I won't get into the drinking issue, but even the chag itself, even the melacha is kadosh on Purim. Everything. everything could become spiritual. Everything has the potential of being uplifted. And Rav Kook ends by saying, on this day of Purim, this is the day where the curse is transformed to a blessing. What does he refer to? Obviously, we know that there was the klala, right? There was the plans of the Haman and the Achashverosh that obviously did not become a reality, and that is obviously curses that become bracha. But he also relates to the midrash that we have read. The klala of Tisha Be'av becomes a bracha, because on Purim they overcome the effects of Tisha Be'av. Ve'afilu asuk bimelacha sham hu motzei et oro kedusha. Al ken ha'or ha'megula al yedei ha'megila. Even in the melacha we find kedusha on Purim. Take that, and obviously this sheds a different light on the idea of why in the future all the chagim will become void. Because in a sense, in the future, we will not need to detach ourselves from everyday life in order to feel the spirituality. There will not be a need in Yisum Melacha. And in that sense, there is no need to cancel Purim. Because Purim by itself is what we long for. A day which is like every other day. It's a Tuesday just like yesterday was Monday and tomorrow is going to be Wednesday. But this Tuesday is special because we bring Kedusha to the matters of Monday. And that is what makes Purim special. And in a sense, talking about Kippurim Kepurim, Yom Kippur is a great day. And we reach such high spiritual peaks by detaching ourselves from anything physical. We don't eat, we don't drink, we hardly socialize. We behave like angels. And by doing so, we enable ourselves, we uplift ourselves, and we reach those spiritual peaks. Yom HaKippurim, explains the Shla, is only compared to the potential of Purim, where not only do you not detach yourself from every day, from the matters of mundane, but rather you bring kedusha to the matters of mundane. And that is what makes this chag so significant. So we have said two things about Purim. We have said first that according to the Midrash, Purim overcomes the effects of Chet Ha'Egel. And at least according to the Meshech Chochmah, the meaning of that being is that the Hester Panim that we see in Megillat Esther, where the name of Hashem does not even appear once in the Megillah, and we all say HaMelech is Hashem, but that's not Pshat. This Hester Panim was actually an indication of Bnei Yisrael's willingly choosing to accept upon themselves the Torah, not just because of miracles, not just because they hear the voice of Hashem, but rather because they worked for it and actively indicated that this is the fate that they want. We have said that according to the Midrash, Purim also overcomes the effects of Chet Ha'Egel. According to the Sfatem, the effects of Chet Ha'Egel in the sense of not understanding the role that Chol plays in our lives, or detaching ourselves from the matters of mundane, or realizing that by doing so, this is the only Jewish way. Purim, as opposed to any other Chag, has no Isul Melecha, and that is, in a sense, its greatness. From the matters of mundane, we find Hashem. That is great. I have a few more minutes. I want to ask you a question. We have said Kippurim Kippurim. What's like the highlight, the pinnacle of Yom HaKippurim? Don't say Tfilat Neila. I'm asking at the time of the Beit Mikdash. What was like, the major event of the day? What was it? Right. Seder Avodah, right? Where we say in Musaf, this is the time where everyone else scans through. But that was the pinnacle of Yom HaKippurim. And obviously the highlight was the Kohen Gadol, right? Shenichnas lifnai velifnim lekodesh hakodeshim. I want to ask you a question. Some of you may have heard this question from me before, but I'm going to ask it again. What is Kodesh Kodeshim? When we say Hayafa Shebayafot, or I should say it this way, when we say Hayafa Shebayafim in Hebrew, we mean that there are a lot of good-looking guys, but he's much better looking than all of them, right? When we say HaChachama Shebachachamot, what do we say? There are a lot of smart women, but she is much smarter. What's Kodesh Kodeshim? you say something is holier than holy, but holiness is an infinite concept. You cannot add to it. You cannot subtract from it. What could be more holy than holy? I'll ask you this. I always ask this, so if you've heard this before, just ignore. Take three boxes. Label one of them Kodesh, one of them Chol, and one of them Kodesh Kodeshim. And let's try to sort out the items in this room. So the Sefer Torah, where would that go? Kodesh? Are you sure? What about Kodesh Kodeshim? Tanakh. People sometimes tell me Sefer Torah would go to Kodesh Kodeshim and Tanakh to Kodesh. Why? Make mezuzah. Kodesh, I don't know. The chair. So people say to me, usually people say chol, but the oy b'chuchim say, you know, oh, when you sit on the chair and study Torah, then it's kodesh. Whatever. It's easier for us to distinguish between kodesh and chol. But the question is, what goes into the box of Kodesh Kodeshim? What can be more holy than holy? There's an outstanding explanation of Rav Kook, and it sheds a lot of light on our discussion. And it appears in source number 12. Says Rav Kook, Yesh olam shel chol ve'olam shel kodesh. There are worlds of spirituality and worlds of secularity. Ha'olamim sotrim ze'etze. Now, these worlds apparently are in contradiction. In our lives, we always make a distinction. When I wake up in the morning and I daven, that's kodesh. When I drive to work, that's chol. When I eat, that's chol. When I bench, it's kodesh. We always make a distinction between kodesh and chol. Says Rav Kook, kamuvan, for Rav Kook it was, of course, for us, kamuvan astira hi subjektivit. Ha'adam ba'asagato ha'metzumtzemet eino yachol efasher ben olam ha'chol v'olam ha'kodesh. The contradiction is only relative, meaning we, because we're so narrow-minded, we feel that there is a distinction between kedusha and chol. But says Rav Kook, ve'hen omnam miyushavot berum olam b'machon kodesh ha'kodeshim. But where are those contradictions between Kodesh and Chol reconciled? They are reconciled in Kodesh Kodeshim. Meaning, says Rav Kook, Kodesh HaKodeshim is different than Kodesh because you reach a level of Kodesh by detaching yourself from the Chol. Kodesh Kodeshim is where you bring Kedusha to the Chol, and we can prove it. We have just read, right, Parashat Truma, we read of the Kruvim. The Kruvim, according to the Midrash, were Me'urim Zebazeh. This is the word that the Midrash uses. Me'urim comes from the word Erva. It's a very, very hard point to understand that in the holiest place, we had a figure, which is an issue by itself, that had some, you know, symbolism of Erva. And the Midrash even says, I'm not going to read it, but for the purpose of the discussion in source number 13, that the Babylonians, when they conquer Yerushalayim, and when they rush into the Beit Mikdash, they rush to Kodesh Kodeshim because they want to see what the God of the Jews looks like. And they go in and they see the Kruvim, and they're shocked. This is what they have in their holiest place? And they take it out, and they mock the Jewish nation. And according to the Midrash, this is what Megillat Eicha says, Kol mechabdeah hi zilua, meaning disrespectful of the Jewish nation, kira'u ervata, because they see the kruvim who are me'urim. This is what we have in Kodesh Kodeshim, says Rav Kook, yes, this is what we have in Kodesh Kodeshim. In Kodesh Kodeshim, even erva is spiritual. That is the concept of Kodesh Kodeshim. Who would go into the Kodesh Kodeshim according to, says Rav Kook? The Kohen Gadol. According to the Mishnah, there's a list of things. A list of qualifications, if any of you are considering, well, it has to be a male, but still, if any of you, for your, you know, sons or something, what kind of criteria, what kind of things does the Kohen Gadol need in order to be accepted for this great role? So obviously, he has to be married, he has to be Gadol B'Chochmah, but other than that, the Mishnah lists three very interesting things. He has to be gadol mirchav, greater than his brothers, benoi be'oshel uvekoach. He has to be better looking, physically better looking than other kohanim. Very hard to understand. He has to be stronger, physically stronger than other kohanim. And he has to be wealthier than other kohanim. Why are those traits even relevant? What do we care how the Kohen Gadol looks like? If he's such a great rabbi, why is it of importance that he be so good looking? By the way, we know that that was the truth because, for example, Rabbi Ishmael ben Elisha, who was Kohen Gadol, Rabbi Ishmael was one of the most outstanding, very, very good-looking individual, pshat, according to the Midrash, that, you know, that physically he was great-looking, he and his children as well. Why is that important? Explains Rav Kook, that is the major definition of Kodesh Kodeshim. In Kodesh Kodeshim, even those physical traits of being good-looking, of being wealthy, of being fierce, even they matter because it's about bringing Kedusha to the physical world. That is Kodesh Kodeshim. Why am I giving you a speech about Kodesh Kodeshim when we're talking about poor? Let me tell you this. We have said Kippurim Kepurim. And Purim, one individual, the Kohen Gadol, which was chosen from all the Jewish nation, enters, penetrates Kodesh Kodeshim. What happens on Purim? Explains the Sfatemet in source number 18. Ve'ita bazohar hakadosh, he quotes the Zohar. We started off with the Zohar. Purim al shem yom ha-kippurim. You remember we already talked about it. De'atid liyot mishtane mi'inui le'oneg. Why is Purim greater than yom ha-kippurim? Asks the Sfatemet. Ki be'yom ha-kippurim Nichnas haKohen haGadol. Again, this one individual, the Kohen haGadol, and Yom HaKippurim enters Lifnai veLifnim, enters Kodesh Kodeshim. VeAlzekti veAl Yavo bechol et. Right? We know the Torah says that you cannot just go into Kodesh Kodeshim whenever you want, and only one person is, you know, entitled to go into Kodesh Kodeshim. Rak biYom Miyuchad. Ve'al yedei ta'anit kol bnei Yisrael v'initem et nafshotechem. Only by, you know, ta'anit and by refraining from eating and drinking, only then, and all the merits of bnei Yisrael enable the Kohen Gadol and to enter Kodesh Kodeshim. But look at this. Uvimei ha'purim k'tiv avo el ha'melech. Who says avo el ha'melech? Esther. And where was the melech sitting? According to the Megillah, in Hachatzar HaPnimit, which according to the Sfatemet, it's actually the, right, HaMelech is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Hachatzar HaPnimit is Kodesh HaKodeshim, Lo Kadat. Esther says, I don't even have a permit. And we know that without a permit, whoever goes into Hachatzar HaPnimit, that's a death sentence. But on Purim, Avo el ha-melech b'chatzar ha-pnimit shelo kadat. And says the Sfatemet, b'makom she'en rasha'in lavo b'chol et, rak b'purim nitan reshut li'itgalot or ha-ne'elam u'v'chol et. Says the Sfatemet, this is the greatness of Purim. And Purim, all of us, enter Kodesh HaKodeshim. Avo el ha-melech lo kadat. Regardless of whether we have a permit or not, we don't need to be a Kohen Gadol. All of us are in Kodesh HaKodeshim, in this Chatzar HaPnimit of HaMelech. Why? Because of the greatness of the Purim. Because on Purim we have chosen our Jewish identity from this Hester Panim of Purim. And because on Purim we have indicated that we have the ability to bring Kedusha to the matters of mundane, that we understand the concept of Kodesh Kodeshim, this is what makes Purim so outstanding and so significant. I wish to end with a cute story. It may not be so politically correct because it has to be with superheroes, so please forgive me. And if you think I'm a bad mother, then, well, our son really loves Spider-Man. I know it's an issue, it's an educational issue, but what can we do? He really, really loves it. For Purim, we made a decision to buy him a costume of Spider-Man. And we didn't tell him. It was a surprise. He came back from school, and it was waiting for him on his bed, and he was so happy, almost fainted from excitement. He put it on, and he felt like Spider-Man. And I had to convince him not to jump from all the stairs because he cannot truly fly, because he really thought he has superpowers. And that was an issue. So he waited for his father to come from, you know, work. And when his father came, he said to him, you know, I'm no longer Jaime, that's his name, I am now Spider-Man, and I wish to be referred to as Spider-Man. So my husband said to him, well, if you want to be Spider-Man, you have to prove to me that you're no longer Jaime, you have to prove. So he said, okay, what can I do to prove it? So my husband said to him, clean up your room. If you have superpowers, clean up your room. And he said, this is a great idea. I'm telling you, it works. Try this at home. This is a great idea. He rushed to his room, and he cleaned it up perfectly. It was sparkling, shining. He comes to my husband, so my husband says, now I'm completely convinced that you are Spider-Man, because Jaime never cleans up his room, and you did such a great job. I'm convinced that you're no longer Jaime, and that now you're Spider-Man. And he was very, very happy, very happy. And 5 minutes later, he goes back to my husband, and he says, assuming I am Spider-Man, will you still love me as your child? Will I still be a part of this family? So my husband was telling him, you know what, Jaime, this is what Purim is about. You are disguising yourself. It's like a hestelpanim. We don't know who you are beneath this costume. But we, obviously, on Purim, know that you're a Jaime inside. Even when we tell you that we think you're Spider-Man, we know who you really are. And that is the greatness of Purim. Assuming there's a hestelpanim, and assuming this is just a regular, you know, chol day, and we cover ourselves with masks, and, you know, everything is, you know, is so puzzling on this day. It seems like such a confusing day. On this day, we find the light and the kedusha that's within. We choose to do so. We indicate that we are able to do so. And in that sense, Kippurim Kippurim, this is the first time in the year where we actually stand for ourselves and indicate what we know that we want. We want Zeh Hashem Kivinu Lo, right? Nagila V'Nismecha Bishvuto. We point and express our willingness to lead a spiritual life, not by detaching ourselves from matters of mundane, and not by hoping for miracles, but rather by understanding that our Jewish identity is all about our ability to bring meaning and kedusha and light to our matters of mundane.